Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we'll have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to contact us, send us an email or send us a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent five, are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. Now, this show, we're going to talk about positive attitude and how we can encourage it in ourselves and also in the group participants, how we can encourage a positive attitude so that we can get to a successful outcome, because that's what's necessary. So, like we often do on this show, first I think we're going to talk about what is a positive attitude. How are we going to define it? How are we going to know it when we see it? How are we going to know when we have a positive attitude? And how does a group have positive attitude? And thank you for all of your participation. I see we have lots of people. Thank you very much for being here. You know, this is a real good definition of positive attitude. Arif says that it's the conviction that you will succeed. Positive attitude is the conviction that you will succeed. Yeah, we know we're going to do it. We know we're going to go forward and there may be some bumps in the road, but we're going to ultimately reach our goal. We're going to succeed. That's certainly a positive attitude, and I'm getting a lot of agreement. And thank you for all of your participation. And Hasita says that positive attitude is that the group goal will be achieved. Well, that's group positive attitude, huh? That the group goal will be achieved. We're going to get there together. We're going to make it. We're going to effectuate the change. We're going to whatever it is that we're trying to do. Whatever issues need to be resolved. We're going to do it as a team. We're going to do it as a group. Yeah, that's positive attitude. We can do it. Like the people going like the little engine that could. I think I can. Yes, good point. Quite a few of you know that old story. This is, of course, a global show, a lot of us happen to be in the United States. And what is it, Thomas the Little Engine? Yeah, there's a little children's story I've been informed that it's been translated everywhere. Yes, a little engine that could. I think I can, yeah. So that, but he had a positive attitude, huh? Yeah, I can make it. I can get up the hill. I could have a successful outcome. I can get to the other side and go home or whatever it is he wanted to do. Yes, that's a group goal will be achieved. And the conviction that you will succeed. And Matthew and others are saying it's the willingness to come forward and prevent injustice. It's a positive attitude. I want to have a positive outcome. I want to prevent injustice. And the certainty that it can be done. The willingness to come forward and prevent injustice. Yeah, we're getting a lot of agreement. That's kind of a broad definition of positive attitudes, isn't it? But it's certainly true, the willingness to come forward and prevent injustice. A lot of people are using examples like civil rights examples or law examples, some sort of a law that is unjust and needs to be changed. I'm getting some cultural ideas that are unjust and need to be changed. Yeah, and civil rights and the women's movement and like that. Positive attitude, willingness to come forward to prevent injustice. What's a positive attitude? Your willingness, your ability to do it, and your conviction that you will succeed, and your willingness to try, right? That's all positive attitude. Good point. You know, Carmen and others are saying that's not only the willingness to come forward and the conviction that you will succeed, but it's the willingness to compromise so that everyone can have a positive attitude and outcome. Willingness to compromise so that everyone can have a positive attitude and outcome. Sometimes that's necessary, isn't it? That we can do it together, and there'll be a little compromise along the way, and we might have to modify an opinion or two. But the opinion that's modified is not that we can get it done. That we know. That's our positive attitude. We can make the change. We can resolve this. We can go forward and reach a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. And the willingness to compromise is often very much a part of that, isn't it? Good point, Carmen and others. Thank you. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you. Glenn says a positive attitude is when you're positive that you can succeed so that you are willing to try various ways. That goes with the compromise, right? And that the conviction that you're going to succeed and the ability to compromise, not your conviction, but your something along the way so that we can all get together and go forward and have a positive outcome. And now we're positive that we can succeed, so you're willing to try various ways. And we've talked about this before, right? And sometimes we have to change the path. We think we know, you know, we've talked about preconceived notions, and we think that we know how to do it. In fact, we're pretty darn sure. But when it comes down to it, it's not working. Or something happens. And we need to try a different way. And we need to have a positive attitude and know that we can succeed and keep going and not get stopped and go, oh, my goodness, it's not working. Let's quit. I don't think so. Yeah. Positive that you can succeed, so you're willing to try various ways. Thank you very much. Glenn and others are saying that, yes. And I'm getting a lot of agreement that a lot of times, we have to try more than one way. But we make it. We have a positive attitude. And we don't just quit. We don't go, oh, my goodness, I'm going to develop a negative attitude and leave. No, we're going to have a positive attitude and go forward. So now we've talked about how we're going to do it, right, and what we need to do and what the individual needs to do. And I'm getting a lot of questions about how you encourage a positive attitude in the group, because we know how to encourage it in ourselves, because we've got that conviction, and we know that we're going to succeed, but we need some help. We need the group, right? So how can you encourage a positive group attitude is the next question. And, of course, I've said this before, but these shows are not scripted, and whatever way the questions goes, that's the way the show goes. And that's pretty much what most people are asking. Yeah, we've got that. We know how to do it ourselves. But how do we encourage a group positive attitude? You know, this is kind of like, yeah, this is the ultimate answer. Thank you, Sahima and others. They're saying that you encourage a positive attitude in the group by having a positive attitude ourselves. We encourage others by example. By having a positive attitude ourselves. We're very certain. And we lead by example. We lead by showing others, well, what we think, and then taking their advice and their opinions and listening, right? Excuse me, I need a sip of water. Yes, and that's a good point. You encourage a positive attitude in the group, and I'm getting a tremendous amount of agreement, by having a positive attitude ourselves. Lead by example. And Michael and others are also adding to that, that it's not only a positive attitude ourselves that we project and that we use as an example, but you also need to refuse to allow negativity. Not allow the group to kind of, you ever see that? You're in a group and you've got a positive attitude and you know that it's going, and we all come in with some enthusiasm, and then it kind of starts to go negative. There's someone who's very negative in the group, for example, and is always saying, how come you can't? And is always shooting everything down. Or it just seems kind of hopeless and we forget to celebrate the small things. You know, it's kind of like, oh, things are getting kind of depressed and it's not working out and I don't want to go there anymore because it's so negative. Yeah, we got to stop that before it starts, right? If you see, we are the leader. We are the third party impartial usually, but the leader, and we have some control over the atmosphere, right? And we don't want it to become negative. Good point. You know, people say something funny, which is actually kind of true. And thank you for all of your participation. A lot of people are saying that being negative is catchy. I don't know how to, it's like contagious. It kind of spreads once it starts. And it spreads kind of quickly, doesn't it? Uh-huh. We need to encourage a positive attitude and to discourage negativity. You know, Raymond and others are pointing out, people are asking what's negativity really, but Raymond and others are pointing out that it's not negative to voice a different opinion, right? We want to hear different opinions. We want to hear everybody's thoughts. We want to know what people have done in the past, what your research is, what you think. We want to know all these things. We want to listen, and we want you to participate. That we want. So it's not negative to voice a different opinion. That's not negativity. But Raymond and others are making very good points. People are saying, well, how do you know when it's turning negative? And this is a very good point, and it's a surefire sign. Raymond and others says that it's not negative to voice a different opinion, but it is negativity to be rude or dismissive to others. Rude or dismissive. That's when you know you've got negativity, and it must be stopped immediately. We don't allow that. We don't allow anyone in our group to be treated rudely or dismissively. And if someone is rejecting everything out of hand just because, you know how sometimes people are just that kind of person, and they're creating they're creating a black cloud over the group. Well, kind of, yeah. They're kind of spreading negativity, and people go, well, if she doesn't think so, maybe it can't be done. No. I always say, well, if you don't think that's the right thing, then what suggestion do you have for going forward? Tell us something positive. Give us your opinion on what we should do, and quitting ain't the right opinion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Negativity. To be rude or dismissive to others. Mm-mm. We do not allow that kind of activity in our group. And we have we've discussed this on prior shows, but it's a real good point to make here, too. And also, if you want to hear prior shows, the last five are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows are archived at the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. And that has to do with rudeness. And we've talked about that, and you are all correct. Rude and dismissive spreads negativity, and it'll ruin the positive attitude of the group. Shelley says you need to immediately stop negativity because it will spread. Mm-hmm. You know, and Brooke and others are saying that in order to stop it, what you do is you encourage participants to examine different options for success. There's often more than one way to get to success, right? You examine different options for success. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Justin and the others are pointing out that in order to prevent negativity and to keep a positive attitude and to encourage a positive attitude in the group, instead of focusing on why we can't, you work on how we can. Mm-hmm. That's always the question. How can we do this? How can we move forward? How can we succeed? How can we take the next step? You know, sometimes if the issues are complex, to succeed seems very far away, the total success, but the next step to get towards that success is what we need to focus on. Yeah. So that's the idea, to keep the positive attitude, to focus on the next step, to focus on the success, to instead of why we can't, work on how we can. You know, Kathleen and others are making a very good point, and thank you for all of your participation, that in order to encourage a positive attitude in the group, you need to use praise. You need to tell people they're doing a good job. Yeah, people like to hear it. I mean, we all know when we're doing a good job, but we all kind of like to hear that someone else knows it too, right? Yeah. We'd like to hear that you think we're doing a good job. It's nice. It's fun. It's a good thing to do. Use praise. Yeah, say thank you. I'm quite big on saying thank you to people. People who do a lot of work. And a lot of times they don't particularly get paid. They're volunteers. It's something they have a positive attitude about. Thank them. Yeah. Yeah, people are saying that they have little award ceremonies, like annually, where they have like a dinner and they give a certificate of commendation, or they point out people who've been especially helpful during the year. All of this is very nice, and you know, people look forward to it. We look forward to it. Let's face it, it's fun to have someone say you did a good job and to give you recognition for it. Yeah, that's a nice thing. I'm all in favor. Praise for positive attitude. It'll keep a positive attitude. Makes a circle. Yeah. Ernesto and others are saying that in order to have encourage a positive attitude in the group, you need to encourage participation. Even if you can't be physically present, you can Skype or conference call. Absolutely true. Thank you for pointing it out, and I'm getting a lot of agreement. Yes, when we say participation, and because we emphasize having some food and making a convivial atmosphere and like that, oftentimes people think, that we're just talking about physically in the room is the only way we meet. At a certain time, we physically get together at a certain spot. But sometimes you can't. Sometimes not everybody can come all the time. Sometimes you need somebody's participation who's out of town or just simply not available to show up for one reason or another. And, yeah, you can participate long distance, Skype, conference call, video conferencing, text messaging. Well, that's a little clumsy. I do like something that has the ability to speak with each other because it's just faster. But and more able to get the tone and to get things done. But yeah, participation doesn't necessarily mean physically in the room. It means full participation, that you get to voice an opinion and that you get to have a positive attitude and you get to have enthusiasm and you get to see what's happening and what other people are thinking. And put your input into what should be done. Yeah. So, we are now have a positive attitude towards our goal. And we're still encouraging group positive attitude. And Tamala says, and we're getting a lot of people who say the same thing. And thank you for all of your participation. That the way to create a positive attitude towards your goal, towards reaching your goal, is to create a team environment so that everyone is working together. I like that concept of team, don't you? Sometimes a group has a foundational sameness. There's some reason why you're a group, and it has to do with something you all do together, like work. You're in the same workplace, you're in the same profession, you're in the same, department, geographic area, whatever it is. But you've got a foundational same you think came from the same spot, yeah. And sometimes a group is kind of mismatched people who believe in a cause and have enthusiasm for it, but they don't have too much in common as people. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yes, people are saying the difference between a workshop or seminar and an actual community group. Kind of, yeah. It's the difference between, well, we need to go because it's compliance, and of course we do a lot of those, and we are coming together to the community because, I don't know, we don't want the bridge torn down or whatever it is, that we have a common opinion that we wish to voice, but not so much in common with each other. And this concept of team will take care of that. It's a little easier when you've got something in common, like work, but team goes for everything. We are a team because we have the same goal, the same success that we want. Mm-hmm. That makes us a team, doesn't it? And if we know that outwardly, if someone tells it to us, we are now a team, that we're going to work together, it makes a difference psychologically. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a positive attitude. I'm part of a team. I have to pull my weight. That's what team members do. Yeah. James and others are saying, we've talked about timelines before, that you set time, that you have to have a timeline for the progress so that you can see that you're making progress as a team. And teams in, kind of implies maybe, people are asking now, and this is a very good question, thank you for all of your participation, and thank you for your questions. If team means that we take the bigger group and we divide it into subgroups, we make smaller teams. Oh, I'm going to say what people always say, I'm going to say it depends. Because it depends, first of all, on the size of the entire group. If it's not very big, then you're a team by yourself. It depends if there are various issues that need to be examined, and the whole group could get a report from the teams that each examine one issue. You see? Yeah, people are saying it's like a committee and subcommittees. Yeah, I suppose it is, because the team would be like the subcommittee and the whole group like the committee. Mm-hmm. It's a good analogy. But yes, the question is being asked, how do you decide on the teams? I don't, generally speaking, yeah, people are saying people who are compatible. Well, yes, but the trick to that is that generally speaking, you don't do the, if you're going to divide into teams because you have such a big group or you need to, you don't generally do that on day one unless it would be beneficial to have the teams grow together. Hmm? Because you need to know a little bit about compatibility and make a kind of a judgment about whether or not these people would go together well. Yeah, people, I'm getting some disagreement, and I admit it. Yep. Thank you for all of your participation. People are saying that you should choose teams just randomly, like out of a hat. And then there is no bias, and you haven't skewed the outcome by choosing people who are either compatible or incompatible, but you haven't skewed the outcome by choosing the makeup of the teams. Hmm, good point. Okay, didn't think about it from that direction. You know, I always say I learned something from these shows, and I hope you do too. Yeah, that's a good point, that if somebody assigns teammates in a judgmental manner because they think they'll be compatible or whatever, it might skew the outcome. Mm-hmm. You might kind of influence it. Very good point. Didn't think about it in that direction, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so random assignment is good. Just there's a great deal of favoring of pick it out of a hat. Mm-hmm. Good point. And then that will encourage a positive attitude because we have to get to know each other, have to work together. No one can slack off because you're a member of a team. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, James and others are making a good point that when you do these meetings and you do these get-togethers, you need to have kind of a timeliness so that you know when they'll end and when they begin, start on time, and when they end, actually a actual timing as in it'll take an hour and a half and I can get my ride after that, because that does encourage people to come, which encourages a positive attitude. Yeah, it's a kind of an administrative thing, but you know, it's a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is an interesting, we've kind of gotten into an administrative thought here for a second, that you can have, well, you know, it's not really, though, because in order to encourage group positive attitude, you need to have people want to come, want to participate, want to make the effort, want to really join and to stay the distance, stay until the goal is accomplished. And so in order to do that, people have to be comfortable, right? You know, you'll have a better positive attitude and want to do it more if it's something that you find pleasant. There's some work involved and there's some research and you have to think. But overall, it's kind of, well, you've got a positive attitude towards it. It's kind of exciting. It's kind of interesting. You're really getting somewhere. And you can't forget the administrative things. You know, James says that the meetings should be timely. It'll encourage a positive attitude. Oh, I don't want to go. They always start late, and then they end late, and then they drag, and then I don't get home till midnight, and I've got work the next day. Well, that's not a positive attitude, right? And then you won't go, and then the other people won't go, and then pretty soon there'll be no group positive attitude because there'll be no group. Yeah, you've got to remember the administrative things like be timely. Start on time so the people can depend on it. End on time so the people can depend on that too. They have an idea of when they'll be leaving, when they'll be getting back. That's important. Mm-hmm. You know, Dan and others are saying that you need to have group meetings only when there is actually something to be done as a group so that you don't become an unwelcome chore to go to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, only I think that's a very good point. You know, people say, well, schedule the meetings every third Thursday. Oh, pardon me. Proves it's a live show because otherwise I would cut out the sneeze. Pardon me, and thank you. People are saying bless you. Thank you very much. Yes, just kind of had to do that for a moment there. So have the group meetings only when there's something to say. You know, I'm getting a divided camp on that because there is an idea, and it's a very valid one, that you'll get a more positive attitude if you set the meetings for a certain time, because then people will know to schedule them. They'll know to come. It'll be on their calendar. And then I've got the camp that says that only call a meeting when you have something to say, because otherwise it's a chore to have to show up every third Thursday for all the months that this is going to take. Mm-hmm. So that's, I'm quite frankly, I think you can kind of maybe schedule a little bit ahead and not permanently. And then if there is nothing to report, you can send an email around in enough time so that people know that it's going to be canceled. Yeah. Well, all right. People are saying, no, you shouldn't cancel things because then people won't be able to depend on it. Okay. Well, you know, it depends on your group. And it depends on how you're running it. And it depends, sometimes you do need to meet fairly frequently to keep it on track and to keep it in people's mind and to keep up the positive attitude. Yeah. And otherwise it'll kind of lag. And then people go, oh, gee, well, I haven't been there 3 months. I must not be doing something. You see, yeah, it's you have to think about it. You have to decide on your group how it is and whether or not we really are meeting, just not in person. Mm-hmm. You know, Nancy and others are saying that in order to keep a group positive attitude, when you meet, you have everyone report a success even if it's a small one. Every time you meet, you have everybody report a success. What have you been doing that has succeeded? How do you feel about it? You know, keep the enthusiasm up. Keep the positive attitude. Have everyone report a success, even if it's a small one. Good point. Mm-hmm. You know, Hute and others are saying you need to acknowledge success, and you remember to say thank you, and remember to show appreciation. I really do think that's important, to say thank you, to show appreciation, and to acknowledge success. Mm-hmm. And yes, and we've gotten kind of that time in our show. Sylvia and others are saying that the convivial atmosphere that we advocate forming, because Recipe for Peace now thinks that in order to have a successful meeting and to have a time out that's smooth, we use food as a tool. You know, I always say that we don't use food because we're hungry, necessarily. It's really a tool to get us talking to each other and to have a time out before things get negative or heated or out of bounds there. Mm-hmm. As Sylvia says, that the convivial atmosphere creates a positive attitude that people want to return and get the job done. Mm-hmm, yeah. The convivial atmosphere creates a positive attitude because people want to return and get the job done. You know, it's a good point. If you've got something you like doing, it's a positive attitude in itself, and you're going to want to keep doing it. Going to want to see it through to the end. Yeah, people are saying you're going to be disappointed when it gets solved. Yeah, sometimes that happens too, but hey, you've made some friends. And then the next time you'll get together and solve something else. So we've reached the portion in our show where we talk about the convivial atmosphere and the fact that it is oftentimes better if you're going to have a physical meeting to have some food to go with it, because it's a tool to get people talking, right? Right. And I'm going to say the same thing that I say every show because it's so important. If you are going to have some food, you must communicate with everybody who's going to participate, however it is that you've been communicating, email, phone, whatever. You must communicate with them and ask if anybody has a food allergy, a food prohibition, or religious restriction, because you don't want anybody to not be able to have a good time. Also, the rule is that if you're going to bring food, it needs to be labeled. Not what it is, meatloaf. No, it needs to be labeled what is in it, in a list, so that we can all make a judgment as to whether or not we can eat it. Very important. You need to advise people as to what's in it so that we know. Yeah. Otherwise, how will they know if they can eat it? So, and also, those of you who have been here before, thank you very much for returning. And welcome to all the new people. And thank you all for all of your participation. Yes, people are going, I know what you're going to say. Yes, I am. I think that the host should have some extra food, primarily because I hate to run out. I think it makes a lousy party. And also, I think that we should have something safe. Now, what's a safe recipe? Well, we've taken our survey about food allergies, prohibitions, religious restrictions, right, right. And now we're going to have something that we think most people can eat. We're still going to label it, but it has not too many ingredients. And there are ingredients that the people that are going to be my participants would be familiar with. Now, my participants might be familiar with different ingredients than your participants. You've got to judge that. And, of course, these are all general recipes that you can tinker with, put different things in. And I tend not to cook very spicy. The reason being that I put condiments on the side for people to decide if they would like to take them. And then you can always add, but you can't take out. So our safe recipe is going to be just a traditional lamb stew. Mm-hmm. I like lamb in it because lamb is soft-ish in consistency. You can make this with beef. It's a little bit tougher. You can substitute whatever you want, but you must, of course, make sure it's cooked through. So here is our basic lamb stew recipe. It is our safe recipe this time. We're going to have half a cup of flour, just regular old flour, a teaspoon of salt, and maybe a little bit of pepper if you'd like. There are going to be 4 pounds of boneless lamb stew meat cut into cubes, cut into chunks, so to speak. If they've got an awful lot of fat, you should take some of the fat off. 2 tablespoons of vegetable oil. We're going to have a nice big can of diced tomatoes, which we're not going to drain, like a 28-ounce one, 2 cans if they're 16 ounces. Yes, you can use fresh tomatoes. Yours will come out better than mine. I'm going to use the can because it is so convenient to me. It is so economical, and it's easy. I just throw it right in. But if you want to dice up tomatoes, that would be lovely. But remember that you need to add some extra juice, some extra broth, liquid in there. We're going to have a nice big onion we're going to chop up. I'm going to put a little bit of dried rosemary. I actually like the kind that doesn't come on the stalk, primarily because I forget to take the stalk out, and it's cheaper. So I'm going to say about 2 teaspoons of dried rosemary that we're going to crush up. Maybe run a little knife through it if you need to. 6 large carrots. We'll cut them into chunks, big slices. Going to peel them, of course, right, you knew that, wash and peel. About 6 potatoes peeled and cut into cubes also. I'm going to use a package of frozen peas. You want to use fresh, yours will come out better than mine, just because frozen peas are very convenient to me. You want to thaw them. And you know, I don't know why, but when I make stew like this, I like raisins in it. I think it's delicious, and it gives it that little touch of sweetness. I'm going to use a cup of raisins. Plain old dried raisins. If you can get your hands on them, I favor the white ones. I think they're sweeter, for one thing, and a little bit plumper. Use as plump as you possibly can get your hands on. Otherwise, they're all skins. And I think they look pretty in the stew. They add a whole dimension of visual to it. So, raisins. Yes. Now, I'm going to combine the flour and the salt and the pepper, and I'm going to put the lamb in it and turn it all around to coat all 4 sides of the cubes. I'm going to coat the lamb with the flour, the salt, and a little bit of pepper, basically with the flour, because we didn't put too much salt or pepper in. And, yes, people are saying to throw the dry ingredients and the lamb into a plastic bag and kind of shake it all around. I don't usually, for some reason, I can't get it to go even. But it's probably faster, and it's probably a good idea. But anyway, coat the lamb with the flour. Now we're going to get ourselves a nice big pot, and we're going to brown the lamb in the oil until they get nice and browned on all sides. And we're going to drain it off. It doesn't take too long, what, about 10 minutes. You just have to have a little bit of patience and turn them around. You heat up the oil and put the lamb in and turn it around. If you don't do that step, it will be very tough and you'll be sorry. You have to brown them. You have to kind of seal in the juice. Now, in that same pot, which we drained of the lamb grease, we're going to add the tomatoes and the onion and the rosemary and, maybe a couple of cloves of garlic that we crushed because I just like garlic and things. And we're going to cook it, and we're going to we're going to add back the lamb. Did I say that? No, people are going to say to put the lamb in. You guys are listening. Thank you. So we're going to add the tomatoes with the juice, the onion, the rosemary, chop up a couple of cloves of garlic if you like it, and the lamb that we've browned. And we're going to cover it, and we're going to simmer it for a couple of hours. You don't have enough liquid, put in a little bit of broth, because we really used the liquid from the diced tomatoes, but we might need a little bit more. Take a look at it. But stew should be thick and not watery. We're not making soup. So we covered it and we simmered it. Now we're going to add the potatoes and the carrots, and we're going to cook for another hour. This sucker's going to take a little while, about 3 hours or so, because you need to have everything cooked through, and lamb is tough. It needs to be tender. So you cook the whole thing until the lamb gets tender. You cook the lamb a little bit first, about a couple hours, add the carrots and the potatoes, and they cook until they get soft but don't fall apart, which is why you add them later, and the meat is soft. That's all cooked through and lovely. Add the raisins, because the raisins don't need to cook forever, like 10 minutes before you're done to the hot liquid, stir them all in, and add your peas. Because the peas already are pretty much cooked, because they're using frozen peas. Yeah, add your peas kind of 10 minutes before it's all done also, so that everything is hot and the raisins get soft and the peas get cooked through, but nothing falls apart. Delicious. You serve this with rice or noodles, some sort of a pasta. People are voting for couscous. Yes, George, hello. Yeah, he always votes for mashed potatoes. Yes. You serve it with something to put under it in a big pot on the side. I always think that you serve the starch on the side because then people can choose as much as they like. And then they can choose a lot of rice and a little bit, whatever. But that's the fun of the potluck. You get to choose what you want. And yes, this is not very spicy, and people are asking about all kinds of additives. The answer is yes. Do as you please, but make sure that it is cooked very thoroughly through, that the meat is tender, and that you haven't made the vegetables crumble, kind of fall apart. That's where we put them in for only about an hour. And yes, it's kind of a cold weather dish, and you can indeed simmer it and finish it off in the room where you're having the meeting, where your group is coming. And it smells wonderful, right? And it simmers away, and everybody can't wait, and if it's cold, it's very nice and warming. And it's wonderful. You can't make it together. It takes too long. But you can finish it off and make it simmer so that it's nice and hot. And then people have something to look forward to. And it makes everybody feel kind of like, well, we have a positive attitude because it's a good party. Yes. And so that's the safe recipe. Why is it safe? Well, it doesn't have things that too many people are allergic to. If somebody's allergic to tomatoes, people are pointing out tomatoes, yes, that's in the list and you've taken the survey beforehand. And it's usually people can eat it. People asking about pork and about adding some wine to it, that, in my opinion, would make it more of an adventure recipe, right? Because people have prohibitions about alcohol. And about pork. Some people don't eat pork. It's a religious or a dietary prohibition. So, in any event, that is our safe recipe. And if it's not safe for your group, well, you'll know that too because you'll have asked. And we're, of course, going to label it. So, let's get on to our adventure recipe. Now, what makes this an adventure recipe? Well, it's the fish. A lot of people are allergic to fish. And it might not look like fish cakes, so you must label it very carefully. It's hard to know what a thing that looks like that is. It could be chicken. In fact, well, I've never made it with chicken. You could chop chicken. I wouldn't recommend it. Okay, so this is breaded fish patties. I like to make them kind of thin, like little potato pancakes, so to speak, and not balls like meatballs, because I think they need to be cooked through very thoroughly, and I'm always worried about the middles. So that's just me. So this is our adventure recipe. Pardon me. We're going to have about 3 tablespoons of vegetable oil. You know, you can always add a little bit more if you see it's going dry. 2 stalks of celery that we're going to chop up nice and fine. A nice big onion that we're going to chop up nice and fine also. Let's have a garlic clove added to the mixture, mince it up nice and fine. We're going to have 2 cups of breadcrumbs. If you want to make them, that's nice. Make them nice and small. In the States, you can, of course, buy packages of breadcrumbs, like cans of breadcrumbs. Well, a paper can, a package of breadcrumbs. And sometimes you can buy flavored breadcrumbs. They have different herbs and things. If you're going to do such a thing, I like Italian. It's got all kinds of nice parsley and stuff right in there, and it's just delicious. Let's get 2 pounds of fish. like cod, something that is firm and white in color. And yes, I think you can really use canned fish, like tuna fish. Nothing wrong with that. Just make sure that you drain it really well so that it's not wet. Also, if you have a choice, and usually around here we do, if you have a choice, pick in water and not in oil, because the oil is greasy. It changes the consistency of the fish. The water ones as a firmer, drier fish to work with. Yes. If you're going to use uncanned fish, if you're going to use fresh fish, you must bone it very carefully. Yes, sometimes they have those nasty little bones. Personally, I use a tweezer. I don't even know if that's a good thing or not, but I find it very convenient. I use a big tweezer. Yeah, people are... I'm getting a lot of agreement that people, yeah, you just use a tweezer. People use a little plier. I suppose a little pointy nose plier. Anything that'll grab them and pull is the idea. But be sure that you really, really bone it. We don't want to hurt somebody. 3 tablespoons of mayonnaise. Yep. I think it's delicious in it, and it adds nice fat. Don't shirk on it. Don't use something light. 2 nice big eggs that we're going to beat up a smidge. 1 tablespoon of chopped parsley, just because it looks nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so we've got the eggs and the mayonnaise, and we've got the vegetables and the breadcrumbs and the fish, and we're ready. Yeah. Now we're going to heat up some oil, and we're going to add the celery and the onion and the garlic, and we're going to cook it until everything's tender and a little bit brownish and like that. It shouldn't take too long. We chopped the whole thing pretty fine. So it takes, about 10 minutes, not more. And we move from the heat. We're going to give it a nice stir occasionally so that it all gets around. And now we're going to take about 2/3 of our breadcrumbs, and we're going to just leave them alone. Just put them aside, because we're going to spread them out, and we're going to use them for the breading. The rest of breadcrumbs, we're going to put them in a bowl. We're going to take our fish, and we're going to chop it. People ask if you use hello, lost my ability to talk for a minute there. A grinder. No, I don't use a machine, and I don't use a food. People are asking about food processors and grinders and like that to chop the fish. Yes, you certainly could, but then you've kind of got a mess with the cleanup, right? Because you've made raw fish and whatever it is. I guess I'm lazy about it. I actually just take a piece of wax paper and on top of a cutting board, and I take a big chef's knife, one of those all-purpose big knives, and I've already boned the thing. We already talked about using a tweezer. And I just chop it. I really do. And that's why you can use tuna out of a can if you drain it, because you just give it kind of a chop. Just, yeah, it doesn't have to be real fine, kind of a rough chop. Well, the fish will chop. You kind of give it a once through in a nice chopping direction with a big knife, and then you don't have the mess of a grinder and a food processor, and people are asking about all kinds of stuff. Well, yeah, you could, but it's not that much fish. Just use a knife. It's simpler, and you don't have to mess with it. So we've got the fish chopped up, right? We're going to stir in the celery, onion, and garlic mixture that we made soft and we just cooked. We're going to add the egg and the mayonnaise and the parsley and the breadcrumbs, the breadcrumbs that we put in the bowl, and we're going to squish it all together. This is what our hands are for. It's lots of fun. You just squish it all together like making burgers or something. Squish, 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 squish. Yeah, get it all together until it's nice and well combined. And then I make little bitty balls the size of a ping pong ball, just little ones, and then I squish them into patties. And this is the trick. It's now kind of soft. You can't put them in that condition. They're going to fall apart. This is why fish patties fall apart, because people put them in at this stage when it's warm. You've got the warm mixture from the celery and the onions and the garlic, and you've just put in wetness. You've just put in the egg and the mayonnaise, the fat, and like that, so it's warm and kind of squishy. You can't fry it like that. What you're going to do is you're going to put them all on a plate or a pan I use a cookie sheet, and you stick it in the fridge. And you refrigerate it about half an hour. It doesn't take forever. You don't have to refrigerate overnight. No, don't have to do it overnight. This is not a marinade. You refrigerate it until they're cold, half an hour maybe. So they're now refrigerated. They're pretty firm. You can pick them up. Now is the time. You know those rest of breadcrumbs that we didn't use before because they didn't go inside our fish patties? This is our moment. We're going to spread them out. I use a piece of wax paper. It's just easier cleanup. We're going to spread them out and cook the patties both sides. Give them a nice little squish to make sure that the breadcrumbs all stick. Mm-hmm. We're going to take 2 tablespoons-ish of oil. We're going to heat it real hot. We're going to add the patties to the skillet. And we're going to cook them until they're brown and cook through about 5 minutes a side. You'll know when they turn nice and brown. And we haven't made them too thick or too big around, so they're going to cook real nice. Less than 5 minutes, maybe 3 minutes. Turn them over, 3 minutes, you're done. Delicious. Serve it with a little bit of lemon wedges. Personally speaking, I like tartar sauce, but that's just me. Yes, more mayonnaise is always good, too. And yes, there you have it. You have breaded fish patties. Not hard to do. Not too expensive. Is delicious. And, yeah, no, when people ask me about mashed potatoes inside, no, I do them just like this because otherwise you don't get much fish in the patty. And the less extraneous ingredients you add, I know people stretch it with, like, potatoes and things, the more you add stuff, the more chance there is to fall apart on you. And so, you know, I like to make them kind of plain like that. Yes, and then you have the condiments on the side. Delicious. People really like it. It's something that you can take out of the fridge, put the breading on, and fry up as a participant activity. Yeah. Smells nice. Always good to have the frying at the last minute anyway, because, you know, fried things get a little bit, well, they're best when they're hot, let's face it. And so you have them in the fridge. You have the breadcrumbs spread out. Dip it in the breadcrumbs, put it in the skillet. Ooh, deep fryer. I don't own a deep fryer, so I think you can. Don't see why not. Probably be delicious. Yes, we're getting a lot of enthusiasm about deep frying these, so I will assume it can be done. I've never actually worked with a deep fryer because I don't own one. But, but I've seen it done, and, yeah, everything comes out great. But, you see, you could prep this. And if you have the facility, and really all you need is a stove, if you have the facility, a big skillet, if you have the facility, you could make it together as a group. Mm-hmm. Smells nice. Only takes a few minutes on each side. Not as fast as something with a wok, but it's still a group activity and something that can be done at the last minute. Look, let's all make this and bring it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's especially good for a smallish group, because you can only make so many at a time. Mm-hmm. So there you have it. That's our adventure recipe. Why is it an adventure recipe? Well, it has fish in it, and a lot of people cannot eat fish for one reason or another. Uh-huh. Yes, people are asking about all kinds of seafood. The answer is yes. Crab meat would be very expensive where I am, but it would certainly be lovely. Same deal about being an adventure recipe. A lot of people are allergic to shellfish. I would say anything that is a white, fairly firm fish, and people are saying tuna's not white. Well, okay, light colored. I was thinking not orange like salmon. But, delicious. And I suppose you could make it with salmon if you'd like also. Yeah. So that is our adventure recipe. And I see that our time together is nearly up. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. I always learn something, and I hope you do too. If you'd like to contact us, we are at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, the last 5 are archived at the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows are archived at the radio station. at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. I love hearing from you. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.